It is 5 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. A U.S. military official is saying Thursday that Iranian cargo ships, which may be carrying weapons for Houthi rebels in Yemen, are moving away from Yemen. The official said the Pentagon will continue to watch the ships carefully. White House has said it has had evidence that Iran supplied arms to rebels in Yemen. The Pentagon has deployed a number of U.S. warships to ensure that the key Gulf shipping channels stay open. Military officials deny that the U.S. fleet is there to intercept Iranian ships. A U.S. counterterrorism operation in January accidentally killed two hostages held by al-Qaeda on the Afghan-Pakistan border. President Obama apologized Thursday for the incident and reflected on the mission.
As president and as commander-in-chief, I take full responsibility for all our counterterrorism operations, including the one that inadvertently took the lives of Warren and Giovanni. I profoundly regret what happened. On behalf of the United States government, I offer our deepest apologies to the families.
American Warren Weinstein and Italian Giovanni Loporto had been working on aid projects in Pakistan. European Union, under mounting pressure to ease a surging migrant crisis, has agreed to triple funding for maritime search and rescue operations in the Mediterranean. An EU summit on Thursday came just 4 days after up to 900 migrants aboard a single boat bound for Italy drowned off the Libyan coast when the vessel capsized. It was Europe's worst migrant disaster. About 150,000 migrants reached Italy last year. This is VOA News. NATO Chief Jens Stoltenberg is reporting a substantial Russian buildup on military hardware near the Ukrainian border, including more than 1,000 pieces of heavy equipment, also advanced weapon systems, tanks, and artillery. Speaking Thursday in Brussels, Stoltenberg also accused the Kremlin of providing pro-Russia separatists inside eastern Ukraine with advanced training, despite a ceasefire brokered 2 months ago by Russia, Ukraine, Germany, and France. In Moscow, Russian Defense Minister Sergei Shoigu denied the NATO claims while accusing the U.S. military of providing training to urban fighting to Ukrainian National Guardsmen near the Russian border. U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf rejected Shoigu's accusation. World Health Organization reporting dramatic progress has been made in the fight against malaria, but they say more needs to be done. Lisa Schlein reports.
The World Health Organization says phenomenal progress has been made in the fight against malaria in the past 15 years. Richard Cebulski is coordinator for strategy, economics, and elimination in the WHO Global Malaria Program. He says a tenfold increase in funding for malaria since the year 2000 has resulted in huge expansion of malaria programs. He says more people than ever before have access to insecticide-treated mosquito nets, and more people are getting diagnostic tests and appropriate treatment. But the WHO estimates there were nearly 200 million cases of malaria worldwide in 2013 and more than 500,000 deaths. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Thursday was the last day of campaigning in Togo before Saturday's presidential polling. President Faure Gnassingbé faces four challengers in his bid for a third term. Gnassingbé family has ruled Togo for almost 50 years since Gnassingbé Eyadema took power in a military coup in 1967. His son Faure stepped to the office in 2005 after his father died. The Calbuco volcano in southern Chile has erupted twice in 24 hours, putting that region on high alert. Volcano erupted Wednesday afternoon for the first time in more than four decades, sending a towering plume of ash more than 10 kilometers in the air. Thousands of people were evacuated. French Prime Minister Manuel Valls says the threat of terrorism in France has never been so high, saying police have prevented five potential attacks since 2013, including the arrest of an Islamic extremist this week who is believed to have planned attacks on one or more churches. Get more news by going to our website at voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voices of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 24th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. The European Union agrees to step up immigrant rescue operations in the Mediterranean.
The European leaders agreed to a four-point plan to tackle the Mediterranean migration crisis, including capturing and destroying smugglers' boats and sharply increasing funding for the Mediterranean search and rescue mission known as Triton.
That's VOA correspondent Lisa Bryan in Paris. Zambia's president calls for a regional summit over South Africa's xenophobia. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda denies involvement in Cashgate corruption scandal, and the leader of South Sudan's main opposition party says security forces surrounded his house overnight.
Starting from about 9 o'clock our time here, the elements of security surrounded my house and blocked all the road leading to the house.
Lamar Cole is chairman of the Sudan People's Liberation Movement for Democratic Change. The people of Togo are voting tomorrow in a presidential election. Former Zimbabwe Prime Minister Morgan Tsvangirai launches a campaign for electoral reforms. Those stories plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. European Union leaders have pledged to triple funding for a search and rescue operation for migrants in the Mediterranean and crack down on traffickers. Lisa Bryant has more on the outcome of an EU emergency summit held Thursday in Brussels aimed at helping to solve a growing humanitarian crisis.
The European leaders agreed to a four-point plan to tackle the Mediterranean migration crisis, including capturing and destroying smugglers' boats and sharply increasing funding for the Mediterranean search and rescue mission known as Triton. At a news conference after Thursday's summit, President of the European Council Donald Tusk of Poland, which holds the rotating European Union presidency, said Europe did not cause a tragedy that has seen hundreds of illegal immigrants die at sea this year.
But that doesn't mean we can be indifferent. We are facing a difficult summer.
Tusk said EU leaders also agreed to curb illegal immigration, protect refugees, and encourage relocation of migrants from so-called frontline countries like Italy to other EU countries on a voluntary basis. The EU has been sharply criticized for not doing enough to address the Mediterranean migration crisis. Even before the summit ended, the rights group Amnesty International criticized the measures being discussed as woefully inadequate. Even European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker expressed disappointment with the result. Juncker said he had hoped the outcome would be more ambitious, but he said it allows for more reflection in the coming weeks. The summit was called after hundreds of people drowned in the Mediterranean on Sunday when their boat capsized. Before the summit, top United Nations and other migration officials called on the EU to go beyond what they called a minimalist approach toward illegal migration. Experts say broader issues like poverty and conflict in migrants' home countries must also be addressed. Lisa Bryant for VOA News, Paris.
Zambian President Edgar Lungu is consulting with other heads of state to convene an emergency regional summit of the Southern African region to address xenophobic attacks in South Africa. Information Minister Tshishimba Kabwile says Zambian citizens in South Africa have not been affected by the latest round of attacks targeting mostly African migrants. Kabwile, however, said Zambians are displeased with the attacks, especially when their country played a leading role in the fight against white apartheid rule.
We've been very worried at the happenings in South Africa in as far as xenophobia is concerned. And I think our president has been speaking to fellow presidents who are members of SADC to try and call for an urgent SADC meeting so that they can discuss the issue and find a lasting solution for this matter not to recur. You may wish to know that xenophobia in South Africa did happen in 2008. And I think when it happened, people took it casually. And that is why there was a recurrence this year. Now, what we are saying as Zambia is that we must take it to SADC so that it is discussed at length and find the lasting solution so that it does not happen again.
Minister Kambwili, were Zambian citizens affected?
And fortunately for us, no Zambian has been caught up in this confusion. No Zambia has been beaten. No Zambia has been killed. In fact, I just came from South Africa yesterday, where I went to make an on-the-spot check to see what is going on, and all the Zambians are safe. But we cannot leave it continue just because no Zambian has been affected, because as far as we are concerned, we are one Africa, we are one Southern African people, and when one is beaten, when one Malawian is beaten, it is as good as one Zambian is beaten. So it may be a fact that no Zambian has been affected, but the mere fact that Malawians, Zimbabweans have been beaten implies that even Zambians have been beaten.
How are Zambians particularly reacting to this incident that even some South Africans are condemning?
The Zambians are extremely upset. You know, like I said, most of the prominent politicians in South Africa were resident in Lusaka. The ANC headquarters was here in Lusaka. People like Thabo Mbeki lived here in Lusaka and worked in Lusaka. And up to now, the office which used to house the ANC is still here in Lusaka. So the Zambians are saying, look, why should our brothers in South Africa be beating foreigners when we did so much to try and help them to fight apartheid? And it hasn't gone well with the Zambians. But I think by and large, we've been telling them not to worry, and that we do realize that this act is being caused by the illiterate of the illiterates in South Africa. You know, the levels of illiteracy among some of the South Africans is very high, because during the apartheid era, very few blacks were exposed to education. So the level of thinking, the level of perception, and the level of interpreting certain issues are not so good among the South Africans.
Tshishimba Kambwile is Zambia's information minister. He spoke with reporter Peter Clotty from the capital, Lusaka. Former Malawian President Joyce Banda, who has been living in exile since her defeat in last year's election, says that she has not returned home because she has a packed schedule of international speaking engagements. Banda denies she has been away from Zambia because she fears being arrested for her alleged role in Malawi's biggest financial scandal known as Cashgate.
After the President Peter Mutharika was declared winner, there was a life after State House. For those Malawians that know me, I am an international public speaker. So I went back to my speaking engagements, and so I had a schedule for almost a year. I also had to look at the Joyce Banda Foundation.
But why have you stayed outside the country for such a long period of time without returning to Malawi?
I don't have a job in Malawi. What surprises me is that you are asking me this question, because in the past we have seen presidents that have left office in Malawi and have gone and spent many, many months outside the country. Do you remember the times when President Bakiri Muluzi stayed for long periods in the UK with his family? So I truly believe that there was no problem with that then, and there's no problem with me staying outside as well.
One of the suspects in the Cashgate scandal said on the radio that you are connected to the scandal. Well, what would you say?
Mr. Oswald Lutepo was indeed a member of People's Party. And Mr. Oswald Lutepo was only 6 months old in our party. When it was now clear that he was the main suspect after the first group were arrested, my government instituted an international search and found him in China and brought him back. The statement that he gave when he came back has been changed 4 times. I have evidence that he was being forced to implicate me or his wife would be arrested. I want you to know that following that statement on radio that you're talking about, there was also a follow-up announcement by this official spokesperson of government, Mr. Nakuma, who said that they had a CCTV footage that showed me and Mr. Lutepo conniving to swindle the Malawi government. If you recall, I established a commission of inquiry to investigate and find out how our former president died in State House. That is how we first found out that there's no way we could see how he died, because the CCTV in State House wasn't working. So for the 2 years that we were in State House, we didn't have any CCTV that was working. So I don't know where this footage came from.
But why do you think do they want to implicate you in this Cashgate scandal?
My advisors warned me that I should expect abuse, because at the end of the day, you are fighting powerful people, and they'll fight you back. They will not just stand there. And they warned me that they would bring me down. So I'm not worried.
That's former Malawian President Joyce Banda speaking with viewers Lamek Masina in Johannesburg, South Africa. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, April 24th, and please send your comments and opinions to Daybreak Africa at voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 15 and a half minutes past the hour. The leader of South Sudan's main opposition, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Democratic Change, SPLMDC, says government security forces surrounded his house late last night. Lam Akol says he does not know why the security forces are at his house, but he admits he has been outspoken lately about the country's ongoing civil war and the rising cost of living.
Well, what is happening is that it's starting from about 9 o'clock our time here, the elements of security surrounded my house and blocked all the road leading to the house.
So why do you suppose they've surrounded your house?
I have no idea. I have no idea because nobody spoke to me.
Is there any problem between you and the president or any of your military?
No, nothing I know. Why would I have problems with them?
Does it have anything to do with the current situation in Malakai?
No, I haven't anything because the situation in Malakai is connected with the army of the government. They are all part of the SPLA, so. And we don't speak on matters of the army.
Are you a sympathizer, or do you think they suspect you of supporting or belonging to the rebels?
Why would they? Because my ideas are clear. What I say is public, and they are published. So nothing that suggests an iota that I am sympathetic to the rebels.
What do you mean that your ideas are clear and what you've said has been published? What did you say?
Well, I said a lot of things on the issues, you know, the current issues. Whenever there is an issue that is subject to public discussion or public scrutiny, we give an idea on them. For example, elections, the extension of the period, the issue of the inflation, the rocketing prices, all these matters, we give our opinion on them.
Then you will understand then why they think they have surrounded your house, because apparently you are against the extension of the president's term in office. Is that correct?
Well, in a democratic country, people should be free to say their opinions through peaceful means. So why would they be surprised that we are against that? Because it is an unconstitutional move, and we said why.
Talking about the skyrocketing prices of commodities, that is another thing that the government or the president might see as a criticism of his government.
Well, it is not. It is a stating a fact. You have to go to the market a day. For example, the day before the rise, I bought a bag of sorghum for £50. Then 2 days ago, it was selling at 110. So is it not rocketing? Because the price has increased by 120%.
Talk to me about the security forces you said are surrounding your house. Do you still see security people around your house?
They are still there, yeah. Up to now, they are still there.
Now, what do you think is going to happen to you at daybreak?
I don't know. Today, who knows what they want to do?
Is it uncommon? I mean, do you have any security detail? Can I be that those...
No. When you are given security details, you are informed that these are the people who will be helping you or looking after you or seeing that nothing bad happens to you. There's always information when it is a security detail.
Lam Akol is leader of South Sudan's main opposition, the Sudan People's Liberation Movement, Democratic Change, SPLMDC. You are speaking with me from inside his surrounded house in Juba. The people of Togo are voting tomorrow, Saturday, in a presidential election where President Faure Gnassingbé faces four challengers in his bid for a third term. Viewers and look has the story on what the Togolese people want from this election, with additional reporting in Lomé by Modesta Masevusu.
The Gnassingbé family has ruled Togo for nearly 50 years, since Gnassingbé Aedima took power in a military coup in 1967. His son, Faure Gnassingbé, stepped into the office in 2005, when his father died. Some people in the West African nation say it's time to move on. The same family in power for several generations already. That hurts the country, this voter says. We are a bit sick of the name even. He says neighboring countries have had three or four presidents during that time. He says he thinks someone new at the top will bring innovation. But other voters say the Nyasingbes are not the problem, nor do they think the incumbent will lose. This voter says change does not have to mean a new president. It could just mean a new program or new ideas. He says, I want change, and the candidate platform that best addresses my needs is the president's. He can win and still change certain strategies and ways of working, so Togo can stay on the right path. Six parties are boycotting this election. Three other parties are backing Mr. Nyasingbe. The opposition tried and failed to get parliament to put a two-term limit in the constitution last year. A key force behind that proposed reform was Jean-Pierre Fabre, the opposition frontrunner in this election. Mr. Fabre's camp says a win would be a, quote, rebirth for Togo. Both Mr. Nyasingbe and Mr. Fabre claimed victory in the 2010 election. Mr. Fabre said there was fraud and intimidation. The dispute led to violent street protests. Voters say they want a peaceful election. Beyond that, they say they want better daily lives and equal access to opportunity. This voter in Lomé says young people need work. People should be able to eat three times a day. He says Togo should join other emerging nations. This country is taking off, he says. But that success needs to reach everyone. And look, VOA News, Dakar.
Zimbabwe's main opposition leader, Morgan Tsvangirai of the Movement for Democratic Change, has launched an electoral reform campaign, declaring his party will not participate in any elections in the country unless the government ensures the electoral playing field is level. Thomas Cheripasi of VOA Zimbabwe's service has details from Harare.
No reforms! No reforms!
Launching the campaign at a rally attended by hundreds of his party's supporters in Harare's Glenview High Density suburb, Tsvangirai said his party would push President Robert Mugabe's government to implement electoral reforms before the MDCT participates in future polls.
For now, we are not going in until reforms. No reforms! No reforms!
The former Prime Minister claimed that his party decided not to take part in the June 10 parliamentary by-elections following the expulsion of 21 lawmakers aligned to the MDC renewal team after realizing that ZANU-PF was going to rig the polls. The opposition party leader claimed that all previous elections were fraught with irregularities, including the alleged manipulation of the voters' roll and the related issues.
We could have easily retained this seat without any problem. Even if the city is ours, we shall reclaim it at some certain later stage. For now, we are not going in.
But ZANU-PF political commissar Sevia Kasukwere told Studio 7 by phone that the MDCT was going to lose in the by-elections because the party's support base is dwindling.
He's an electoral coward.
Tsvangirai also told his supporters that all Zimbabweans who possess national identity cards should be allowed to vote. He urged Zimbabwe to introduce a biometric voting system as part of the electoral reforms and criticized the Zimbabwe Electoral Commission for failing to avail the voters' roll to his party before the disputed 2013 national elections. Tsvangirai alleged that the Electoral Commission Secretariat was full of members of Zimbabwe's spy network, the Central Intelligence Organization, or CIO, and other feared organs of the state.
ZANU-PF does not believe in free and fair elections, and that for a long time, ZANU-PF has never run free and fair elections. ZANU-PF does not respect the people.
The former premier reiterated his call for mass action, adding that the format of the protest would be announced in due course. Tsvangirai is expected to take his No Reforms, No Elections campaign to Mashingo this weekend. Reporting from Harare, this is Thomas Chiripasi.
It's 25 minutes past the hour time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Mark Ouma in Johannesburg, South Africa. A very good Friday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with athletics. Kenya's Emily Chebet clocked 9 minutes and 10.57 seconds to set a girls' 3,000-meter championship record at the Africa Youth Athletics Championships in Redwood, Mauritius on Thursday. Fellow Kenyan Sheila Chelagat was runner-up ahead of Uganda's Janet Chemusto. On the infield, South Africa's Yolandi Stander claimed a victory in the girls' shot put with a heave of 14.95 meters. Algeria's May Masika Miziod won the girls' pole vault with a clearance of 3.20 meters, while South African Werner Fisser won the boys' discus with a throw of 64.88 meters. Staying in Redwood, South Africa took an early lead on the medal table on the first day at the Africa Youth Championship with 2 gold and 1 silver medal. Kenya is second, followed by Algeria, then Egypt. Morocco and Uganda are tied in fifth place with 1 bronze medal each. Turning to volleyball, Ethiopia beat Uganda 18-25, 25-19, 25-17 and 25-13 at the Women's Zone 5 All-Africa Games volleyball qualifiers in Kampala, Uganda on Thursday. Egypt dismissed Burundi in 3 straight sets. In tennis, Kenyan Lawrence Karanja was voted the International Tennis Federation Wheelchair Coach of the Year for 2014. The Kenya Lawn Tennis Association revealed in Nairobi, Kenya on Thursday. The annual award goes to a coach who has contributed towards the national and international development of wheelchair tennis and players. In football, Botswana hosts Kenya in men's All-Africa Games football qualifiers in Lobatse today, Friday. Tomorrow, Saturday, Rwanda welcomes Somalia in Kigali, while Ghana engage visitors Liberia in Accra. Sierra Leone and Mauritania are through to the next round after their opponents Guinea-Bissau and Libya withdrew from the contest. Finally, in boxing, Ghana's Emmanuel Tagoa fights Joubert De Los Reyes of the Philippines for the WBA International Lightweight Boxing title in Accra, Ghana today, Friday. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Ouma in Stellenbosch, a Western Cape province in South Africa, wishing you all a fabulous weekend. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a very good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. Here's our listener mail for this Friday morning, April 24th.
Good morning. This is William Kukwe from Monrovia, Liberia. I believe the ongoing xenophobic attack on the ordinary Africans in South Africa is a complete cruelty and madness. The people of South Africa must understand that these African countries assisted them during their liberation struggle. For example, His Excellency the late Nelson Mandela did seek refuge in Liberia while fighting for liberation in South Africa. Thank you.
We thank you, listener, for your comment, and please send your viewpoints to DaybreakAfrica at voanews.com. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. The European Union, under mounting pressure to ease a surge in migrant crisis, has agreed to triple funding for maritime search and rescue operations in the Mediterranean. German Chancellor Angela Merkel announced the pledge on Thursday after an emergency EU summit in Brussels. Additionally, French President François Hollande said he will seek a United Nations resolution authorizing the EU to destroy boats used by people smugglers. And that is it for this Friday, April 24th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Button, Washington, wishing all of you a very good weekend.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
Need a little straight talk? Want to make sense of the world around you? Ask a question. Hear what others have to say? If so, Voice of America has a variety of talk shows for you. Lifestyle, health, politics, youth, sports. We have it all. Tune into our discussion shows on the radio, TV, or the internet. They examine a wide variety of issues and world events, not always covered by other media. VOA.